It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Illegal wildlife trade is in high demand, and the consequences include irrevocable extinctions. You might think that things like bear bile, tiger meat, and pangolin scales might not be the hottest commodities on the market, but at somewhere between $7 and $23 billion, the market for products derived from endangered species is right up there with illicit drugs and arms trades. Consequences are rampant and irrevocable extinctions. We talk with Rachel Love Neuer about her new book covering all that and more. The book is titled Poached: Inside the Dark World of Wildlife Trafficking. Why do you think trade of endangered animals continues in spite of laws against it? Let us know. 800-642-1234. ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Rachel Love Neuer, welcome to the Morning Show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. Delighted to be here.
So before you were a journalist, you were a conservation ecologist. Where was the point in your career as an ecologist when you realized that just how widespread the illegal wildlife trade actually is?
Well, to clarify, I was an aspiring conservation ecologist. I was a master's in ecology in rural Vietnam, and while I was down there, I heard about Vietnam's last Javan rhino being killed for its horn, and this really piqued my interest. I was like, why was this animal killed? How is it found? Where is that horn going? All these questions just popped up in my mind.
When you tell the average person on the street that there is an illegal bear bile trade or an illegal tiger meat trade, one might assume that it's a small, you know, super niche market. But that's not actually the case, right? I mean, what's the scope of the illegal wildlife trade?
It depends on which facet of the trade you are talking about. But even something niche like tiger meat, if applied across over a billion people in China, is not so niche. And this trade is affecting thousands of species, millions of individuals. It's absolutely massive.
Compare it to something other big illegal contraband markets like drug trafficking, human trafficking, arms dealing, that kind of thing.
Yes, it is third or fourth in terms of contraband markets in the world and profitability.
We need to let that sink in, because that's a really big, a much bigger deal, I think, than anybody would, the average person would think when they hear about this. How much of a species decline and extinction is driven by illegal trafficking in 2018? Is this as big a factor as climate change, for example?
It is a very large factor. One of the big issues in tackling this trade is that we don't know how big of a factor it is, because the data just aren't there. So you mentioned pangolins, for example. Over the last 10 years, over a million pangolins have been killed for illegal wildlife trade. But we don't know how many are left in the wild. So they could be on the brink of extinction. We don't know.
In your book, you talk about pangolins as the most trafficked mammal in the world. They've been described as an artichoke with legs. I admit I had to Google it. I'd never heard of a pangolin before. Tell us about these mammals, and what is it about them that makes them so sought after?
Yes, pangolins are now my new favorite animal. Everybody should look them up. They're amazing creatures. Nocturnal, the world's only scaly mammal. They live in Asia and Africa. Unfortunately, these shy little creatures are highly sought after for traditional Chinese medicine. Their scales are thought to produce effects such as stimulating breast milk production in ladies who aren't lactating. In places like Vietnam, their meat is also highly sought after. If you're a wealthy businessman and you want to impress some colleagues, you take them out for a meal of pangolin and they're going to be blown away.
So, obviously, this business is not legal. These are, I understand, these are protected animals. Why is it that this business is booming? Is this just about greed? Is it just about money?
Yeah, totally. I mean, the same reason a lot of other illegal markets are booming. Unfortunately, with wildlife trade, as you touched on earlier in the interview, people just don't know its scope. They don't care. There's a very big lack of awareness. So if you go to Vietnam, for example, even though it's completely illegal to order pangolin or bear or something like that at a restaurant, you can very, very easily find it openly for sale.
You met a Vietnamese poacher who was particularly successful with pangolins. Tell us about him, why he became a poacher, and his attitude toward the trade.
Yes, so this guy, his name is Tom Ho, and I met him down in Vietnam's deep south in a place called U Minh, which is a really boggy, peaty place, not very hospitable for people. It also was bombed very, very heavily during the Vietnam War. So Tom Ho arrived in U Minh as a farmer, and things were going well, but then his son was born, and his son had a brain defect. So Tom Ho says he got into hunting to pay for his son's hospital bills. However, I visited Tom Ho a few years after the first time I met him. His son was healthy. Tom Ho was still hunting because he liked the money. I mean, you can make half a year's salary by catching a single pangolin.
The average salary is what, about $1,000 a year, and a pangolin
or less, yes.
Or less, a pangolin would be worth what, $500?
Yeah, you're talking $300 to $500 for a single animal.
Wow. So is Tom Ho's cavalier attitude about breaking the law and law enforcement's indifference to this kind of thing typical?
Oh, for sure. I mean, during my first interview with Tom Ho, we were sitting in his house and a policeman came in to watch TV and see what was going on. And he's explaining how he catches these rare, endangered, protected animals right in front of this guy.
And the policeman didn't bat an eye?
Not at all.
So is there a lot of bribery that is involved here? And let's talk about that first, and then I want to follow up on that.
For sure. At the higher levels, absolutely. Bribery greases the wheels of this operation. That can be from paying off a park ranger to take his guards the other way when you're trying to kill a rhino in the field, to paying the person at customs to get your ivory through. All along the chain, there's bribery.
And in addition to bribery, you point out examples in a lot of places where the people who are actually paid to protect these animals are the ones poaching them. So we're also dealing with that as well.
Yes, corruption is one of the biggest forces acting against our ability to get a handle on illegal wildlife trade. If you have rangers in the field protecting animals who are compromised, you're never going to get a handle on that situation.
And you tell a story in your book about being offered rhino horn in Vietnam. Share that with us.
This was one of the most surreal things that happened to me on this reporting project. A Vietnamese journalist who I'm friends with offered to introduce me to one of his sources, who was a Vietnamese rhino horn user. We met at a busy, trendy restaurant in Hanoi, and this guy brings a tin of Oreos, or what I thought was Oreos, and hands it to me at the restaurant. I open it, and inside, instead of Oreos, is a piece of rhino horn, and I was like, oh my gosh. So I quickly tucked it away. But then as the meal came to a close, the rhino horn user just broke out this rhino horn in front of the waitress, in front of other patrons, and is demonstrating to me how to grind it up into a powder so he could take shots of it later to supposedly prevent a hangover. So just this blasé attitude was all throughout the trade that I witnessed.
I mean, I guess I'm trying to compare this to something that people might recognize. So you're in a restaurant in downtown Madison, and you suddenly put a line of Coke down and snort it right in front of all the patrons.
Exactly. Unbelievable, right? It's just, it's hard for us to conceive of.
It's really crazy. Illegal wildlife trafficking is a global problem, but there are some huge cultural differences at play where animal welfare and conservation are concerned. Can you delve into that for about a minute?
I mean, for sure. Definitely, there's a rich cultural tradition in China and other places of using wildlife products. So ivory has always been very highly valued in China for its beauty. Rhino horn is considered a cure for breaking fevers. But on the other hand, there are these newfangled uses for wildlife products that are driving extinction. So rhino horn in Vietnam, as I mentioned earlier, has become a popular hangover cure. a lot of the people who use it for that purpose don't actually think it works, which is unbelievable. They just bring it out to show off in front of their friends and say it does that thing.
Mm. So how do you overcome these cultural differences?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question. There are groups trying to work on anti-demand campaigns in Asia, because until the demand is stopped, there's going to be trade. People will find a way to make money off of it. But messages, heartwarming messages about cuddly animals and extinctions and these things are not going to resonate with users over there, because the regard for wildlife is not what it is here. I asked that rhino horn user, for example, if he would care if rhinos go extinct, and he just said, no, why would I care about that? So we need to find another way to reach people and convince them. A lot of experts think that might be fear campaigning. For example, like the campaigns we use here about drunk driving. If you drive drunk, you will kill a child. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. This is really amazing. The other thing that was amazing to me as I was reading your book is that the United States is actually the second largest market behind China for a lot of this contraband. And I want to get into that when we come back here. That's something we'll discuss coming up with Rachel Love Neuer, a freelance science journalist who covers the environment and wildlife. She's the author of Poached: Inside the Dark World of Wildlife Trafficking. If you have a question for Rachel, give us a call, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email address, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. It is The Morning Show. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned. Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Poaching is a multi-billion dollar business around the world. We're learning about how it works and its effects from Rachel Love Neuer, freelance science journalist who covers the environment and wildlife. She's the author of Poached: Inside the Dark World of Wildlife Trafficking. When you think about the future of endangered species, what worries you the most? What gives you the most hope? 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. You reveal in your book that the United States, after China, is the second largest market for this contraband. That was a little bit of a surprise. Please explain that.
For sure. It was a surprise for me as well. We used to have an ivory market here. The Obama administration shuttered that on a national level. However, there are a lot of Asian American communities here. There's a lot of wildlife product users. The cultural values that people have in China are brought over here, and that is the predominant driver of demand here.
Let's take a caller. Tom is with us in Brookfield. Tom, thanks for joining us today.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question as to how many qualifies to be on the extinction list, because the demand that it takes to make a $7 billion, whole field of illegal sales out there doesn't seem like it's very practical or profitable to be out in the bush hunting one animal at a time. If they have farms, I don't see the issue with having a farm like what we do with buffalo and cows. We have a farm, we keep breeding them, and we can use them. We can eat them. We can use them however we feel. Just wondering how much farming there is versus hunting, if you guys even
know
that through a number.
Totally. That's such a good question, and it's also a perennial debate between Southern African countries who do want to sustainably use wildlife. People in South Africa, for example, would like to harvest rhino horn. It can be trimmed just like fingernails and sold. However, in Vietnamese and Chinese communities, oftentimes they value wild animals specifically. They don't want some docile farmed animal. because the thought of something living in the wild imbues it with power, strength, purity. It's to the point now that some rhino horn users in Vietnam are asking for quote unquote wet horns. They want a horn that comes off an animal with flesh still attached to prove that it actually wasn't from a farmed animal.
Tom, thanks for your question. 800-642-1234, the number to call to join our discussion. Humans have driven species to extinction or very close to it many times in the past. Did we learn nothing from these experiences?
Yeah, unfortunately, humans just seem perennially short-sighted when it comes to respecting other creatures we share the planet with and the finality of extinction. That's not to say, however, that there are very many people working as hard as they possibly can to prevent these extinctions.
And it is part of the problem that we don't understand the significance when a species goes extinct. It's something, it's some animal we've never heard of. What's the difference if there are no more of them? What does it really cost us when we lose a species?
It's a great question. It is a problem if we don't even know something exists before it disappears. A pangolin is a great example. Many people here have never heard of them, even as they are being driven toward extinction. I am personally a person who believes that wildlife and biodiversity has an intrinsic right to be here, just like we do. However, from a human point of view, we can also make some strong arguments. If you think of ecosystems, you can think of a Jenga tower, for example. These are systems, they're webs that depend on interactions between different organisms. If you remove enough of those blocks, eventually the tower will collapse. And we depend on ecosystems for all kinds of services, from water. I'm here in New York and my water comes from the Catskill Mountains, to pollination of crops, all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about people who are working to turn things around and save these vulnerable species. Tell us about organizations working to save animals. Let's start, for example, with pangolins.
Oh, that's a great question. It is not all doom and gloom. There are people working very hard and making significant headway against this illegal trade. One of my favorite pangolin organizations is a tiny grassroots group in Vietnam called Save Vietnam's Wildlife. It's run by a Vietnamese guy named Thai Nguyen, who's just absolutely passionate about saving his country's natural heritage. They are the only qualified sanctuary for pangolins in Vietnam. So whenever pangolins are confiscated, Save Vietnam hits the road, sometimes drives overnight to rescue those animals, brings them back to their rehabilitation station, gets them healthy again, makes sure they're disease-free, and then releases them back into the wild.
As of 2016, pangolins also have the highest protections under international law. Commercial trade of all eight species is banned. Do you think that's helped?
It's helped in the sense that it makes it much easier for law enforcement. So before that 2016 legislation was passed, Asian pangolins were banned, African pangolins were not. So if you get a big bag of scales, how do you know which species it came from? Now, if law enforcement intercepts something pangolin related, they know no matter what, no questions asked, it's illegal.
Let's take Terry. Let's take Terry's call. Terry, good morning. We're just about out of time, so please be succinct.
Okay. I wonder what the status of the shark fin poaching is coming. That's it.
Sure. Thanks, Terry. Yes, shark fin is a very big deal in China. It's often served at weddings and banquets. There has been headway made in anti-demand campaigns. Yao Ming, the famous basketball player over there, is the poster boy for saying stop buying shark fin. It is declining in Hong Kong. However, it is not solved.
All right. Thanks for the call, Terry. Let's take Ian in Milwaukee next. Ian, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. So this past weekend, I actually just went to the Milwaukee Zoo, and I was kind of skeptical at first because, you know, I kind of get bummed out. But my girlfriend reminded me, you know, zoos have a pretty heavy focus on conservation. And it reminded me of a report I did when I was back in school. They used drones and, like, a team of scientists in sub-Saharan Africa to deter poaching. And it was, like, such an effective method, like, almost, like, deterred 100%. And I was wondering what other methods of technology are being used to deter things like poaching.
Okay, Ian, I'm really sorry to tell you this, but actually the drone headlines were way overblown. If you go to my website, rachelnewer.com, I have a supplementary chapter that I had to cut from the book because I wrote too much that'll tell you all about drones. And it was just a really big PR campaign that went wild. It's unfortunately a lot harder to stop them in the field, but drones can be a super effective method for counting animals, for example, in the field. So technology is a tool that can help us win this battle, but ultimately it's going to be won by the people on the ground who are dedicated to stopping it.
You've witnessed a lot of dark things in your work. What has that been like for you, and how do you keep on doing it?
Definitely it's the people like Ty Nguyen, who I mentioned earlier, that keep me going and inspire me. This is really depressing stuff, but it isn't all doom and gloom. There are stories of hope.
Share one of those as we go. What's one of the things that makes you hopeful about this situation?
There's a park in Chad called Zakuma, and in less than 10 years, the elephant population fell from 4,000 animals to 400. They were just being hammered by these poachers coming in on horseback from Sudan. Everyone wrote this park off as finished. Those elephants were going to die. However, a really effective conservation organization called African Parks came in and just completely overhauled the management and the way they do anti-poaching. Now the poaching has stopped. The elephant population is once again growing. It's just an amazing story of hope. If Chad can do it, we can all do it.
Okay, that's a great place to end. Rachel, thanks for joining me this morning.
Thank you so much.
Rachel Love Newer, freelance science journalist who covers the environment and wildlife, is the author of Poached: Inside the Dark World of Wildlife Trafficking. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.